And now we come to the meat of the matter. Our scripture readings, we have three this morning. Amos 5, 21 through 24, Isaiah 40, verses 1 through 5, Ephesians 4, verses 1 through 4a. From Amos, as follows. This is from the Inclusive Bible Version. I despise and reject your feasts. I am not appeased by your solemn assemblies. When you offer me burnt offerings, I reject your oblations and refuse to look at your sacrifices of fattened cattle. Spare me the racket of your chanting. Relieve me of the strumming of your harps. Instead, let justice flow like a river and righteousness flow like an ever-flowing stream.
Rebecca, tell us what you just played and tell us why.
Okay, so that was the opening to the famous Viola Sonata by Rebecca Clark, written in 1919. I chose this because of its historical context. The scripture talked a lot about justice, and that's really relevant into the history of the writing of this piece. So as I mentioned, it was written by Rebecca Clark, and it was entered into a composition competition along with a piece written by Ernest Bloch. Even though the jury all thought that the piece written by Clark was better, they refused to award her the prize because they did not believe that a woman was capable of writing such music. So the prize went to Bloch, and their reasoning behind this was that Clark's piece must have been entered into the competition by Bloch writing under a pseudonym.
19. Right?
Indeed.
So Rebecca and I have been talking a bit. So we listened, we hear these famous words, this wonderful scripture from Amos of letting your righteousness roll down like an ever-flowing stream. And here we are, 1919, and still a woman enters a competition and could not possibly have written that piece because only a man could write a piece like that. You would think that would have ended at least somewhere along there. But tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, tell me a little bit about the Vienna reality.
Yeah, so the Vienna Philharmonic have been considered one of the sort of best orchestras in the world for about 200 years. However, they didn't officially hire their first female musician until 1997.
97.
So that was 150 years after the orchestra was founded. So she was the harpist called Anna Lelks, and she had previously worked with the orchestra, and she had been paid, but she was never publicly credited for having worked with them. And the reason behind why women hadn't been allowed to be full members of the orchestra were because the male members of the orchestra insisted that accepting women would lower the musical standards. Even in 2019, just 4 years ago, only 15 of the orchestra's 145 full-time members were women.
And she told me this, another fascinating story, that In order to begin to counteract that reality, orchestras around the world started to do blind auditions, so you wouldn't see whether it was a male or female who was auditioning. And that changed the dynamic a little bit, right? But they were still noticing that it was a discrepancy. Excuse me. And what was it that they noticed that the judges were hearing, even though they couldn't see?
They were hearing the noise of the high heels clicking on the floor as the candidate would walk up to the screen to play. So to counteract that, they started putting carpet on the floor. And then the balance not only kind of evened out, but actually flipped to more women than men being hired. I just graduated from a music university this past July, and even then, the guidance given to young female string players going for orchestral auditions is wear flat shoes that aren't going to make a noise.
Isn't that amazing? So, what I think is fascinating, so the piece that she plays for us in the beginning is from 1919. What happens in 1923? Anyone have an idea? What happens in 1923? Say that again, Lee. Right, women get the vote, and the Equal Rights Amendment was introduced into Congress in 1923. It was 49 years later that it actually passed through Congress, 1972. It has not yet been ratified because it needs to be ratified by 3/4 of the states, and that would require 38 states, and only 35 states have ratified it. So 100 years after, 104 years after, we have this reality of a woman could not possibly have written this kind of music. We continue in a nation to not have an equal rights amendment in our Constitution. Dr. King, probably when he was standing at the Washington Monument and talking about I Have a Dream, probably was not thinking about female musicians. Might have been, I don't know. We're not inside of his mind. But there were other issues that were pressing at that time. But the reality is unrighteousness anywhere is unrighteousness everywhere, correct? And the reality is that we still live in a nation in which the statistics are frightening in terms of the injustice that continues to exist in this world. We live in a nation in which during the pandemic, we added more than 100 billionaires in the last 2 years to the United States. The total mass wealth of billionaires went from $2.9 trillion to $4.7 trillion, while through much of the pandemic, 48% of the country, many parts of the country, were unemployed. There's an injustice. There's an inequity that exists in things like that. There is a term that many of you know, ALICE communities, asset limited income, what is it? Income constrained, employed. ALICE, asset limited, income constrained, employed. Nationwide, a third of our nation fits the ALICE statistic or below, which means in practical terms that you do not have the ability, if there is a major mishap in your family's life, to be able to cover rent, to cover as much as a $400 change. And you are at the verge then of being homeless. One third of the nation in Hawaii, that number is 48% of the population. 48% of the population hits that ALICE level or below. It's below a poverty level. This is in a nation that has seen this amazing growth of wealth in the midst of a pandemic, and yet we still have this reality. And so we realize that during the 60s, during the civil rights movement, the black church was a huge part of that movement. It was the voice, that spiritual voice that empowered that movement. Today, in 2023, one looks around and one can wonder, where are the churches in the movements that are so necessary today? Not necessarily where are the people of Church of the Cross, but where are the churches as a whole in these movements? So we begin to look at some of the other scriptures that begin to speak of that as well. So our next scripture, Jim has for us from Amos.
Isaiah 40 verses.
Excuse me, Isaiah, my bad.
Isaiah 40 verses 1 through 5. Console my people, give them comfort, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem's heart and tell it that its time of service is ended, that its iniquity is atoned for, that it has received from God's hand double punishment for all its sins. A voice cries out, clear a path through the wilderness for God. Make a straight road through the desert for our God. Let every valley be filled in, every mountain and hill be made laid low. Let every cliff become a plain and the ridges become a valley. Then the glory of God will be revealed and all humankind will see it. The mouth of God has spoken.
Thank you.
another piece by Rebecca Clark, right?
Yeah. Actually, when I started putting these pieces together, I didn't intend to choose all the pieces by the same composer. But when I read the scripture, I noticed it was a lot about comfort. But it's not sort of comfort in isolation. The scripture clearly makes reference to all of the terrible things that have happened to bring this necessity for comfort and to arrive at this place of comfort. So my initial instinct was to try and choose a lullaby. And I looked through the lullabies of a lot of different composers, and they all seemed too kind of one-dimensional, too nice, too, you know. And then I thought of this lullaby, it's just called Lullaby by Rebecca Clark, and I thought, actually, it's perfect, because it's quite an uncomfortable piece. The intervals he uses, they're not standard intervals in music theory. They're some of the most dissonant intervals that exist. So I thought, actually, the sort of comfort that this represents comes from a deeper place, because it acknowledges the darkness that we need to bring the light. Yeah.
So that whole sense of acknowledging the darkness and the whole sense, I love that she chose a lullaby. Because when we think about the work of justice, we think about some of us will be at a march tomorrow. Some of us, this morning we heard our folks from the Peace, Justice, Stewardship, and Creation talk about the legislation that we at Church of the Crossroads want to help out. All those things, marching, legislation, they're all important. But so too is providing a place to be in the midst of the pain. One of the things that I was struck about in 2018, excuse me, I need to grab my water real quick. 2018, when our Watara lecture, thank you to the Watara family, our Watara lecture was the Reverend Tracy Blackman. Some of you may remember the story that she told about when she became the pastor at Christ the King Church in a town just outside of Ferguson, Missouri. And Ferguson, Missouri, you may remember in 2014, was in many ways the place where the Black Lives Matter movement came to life in many ways, as a person was unjustly killed on the streets, and the community came out. And it wasn't just that community. The community from all around began to come out. And Tracy Blackman became, as a minister in a nearby community, became in many ways the spiritual voice for those folks who were gathering to protest. But one of the things that she talked about is that at that same time, as she's coming to this church is a large church in an urban setting that had about a dozen members. Sunday morning had maybe 20 people that would come to church. And she began to look at the reality in Ferguson, began to look at the reality in her community, a community that was dealing with a lot of different issues. And she made the decision that the role that the church should have should be the place where people can indeed gather. She said, if you need a place to do a funeral when someone has died, Christ the King Church will be your church. If you need a place for a wedding, Christ the King Church will be the place for your wedding. All of these will be free of charge. If you need a place to gather together for those who are planning a march, we will be your place. And she did that not because it was a church growth strategy, but the end result was quite amazing. 5 years later, when she's talking to us, they have gone from a congregation of 12 members and 20 people attending church in this cavernous church to 2 or 3 full worship services every single Sunday with the church filled up and 5 full-time pastors, because they became part of the community. They made themselves part of the community, and that was really the strategy. Church growth was a nice byproduct, but really the strategy was, we need a place where we can find succor and comfort. We need a place to be able to gather. We need to be able to place where we can mourn. We need to be able to be a place where, as Isaiah says, those crooked roads can be made straight by the way that we walk that path of love together. A place where those valleys that have dug deep into our lives can be lifted up in such a way that we can then stand together on level plain. A place where we can know that we are loved and we are cared for. So when Rebecca plays this beautiful lullaby, that is filled with that dissonance, and yet out of that pain comes comfort. We realize that that is who we, as a community, are also called to be. It is important to be on those streets. It is important to stand together. It is also important to be a place that has arms that are open. It says you indeed, in the midst of your pain, in the midst of your hurt, whatever the story of your life, you are indeed welcome here.
And from Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. I plead with you then, in the name of our Redeemer, to lead a life worthy of your calling. Treat one another charitably, in complete selflessness, gentleness, and patience. Do all you can to preserve the unity of the Spirit through the peace that binds you together. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called into one hope when you were called.
Okay, a third piece by Rebecca Clark, right?
Yeah, this is part of a piece called Morpheus. As I'm sure you know, Morpheus is the god of dreams, and David provided me with a slightly different translation of the scripture to the one we've just heard. So the first line that I was provided with was, I am a prisoner of the Lord. And I was really struck by that line because I thought, just like Morpheus, Martin Luther King was imprisoned by, freed by, and given immortality by and through his dreams. Furthermore, the music itself made me think of a comment that David made to me about not mistaking meekness and humility for weakness, because although the music is quiet, slow, and gentle, it is exactly that quiet, gentle simplicity and presence from which this music derives its strength.
Love it. I love the you know, we key in on the dream. We key in on that reality that those very dreams that animate our lives, whether it is the I Have a Dream speech from 1963 or the dreams that you've heard from others or that you have of yourselves that animate your life that has such truth in them that they continue to speak to you and speak to you because what they speak of is a truth that you know before you have words, right? And one of the things that we love so much about when we hear that I Have a Dream speech over and over and over is that he gave words to that which we knew was to be true. We didn't have the words. He gave the words to us, and we get those words, and they begin to shape our lives to even become, as Rebecca says, almost to become a prisoner, but a prisoner in a very positive way that we are owned by them in such a way that they drive us to life. There's a Hawaiian phrase, he iki ana, ia I kapono. Say that with me. He iki ana, ia I kapono. Translated roughly as one has seen the right thing to do and has done it. One has seen the right thing to do and one has done it. And when you think of the call of Dr. King, you think of the call of all of the prophets, that is the call. You know here in your na'au, in your gut, you know the right thing to do, and you do it. And we are called to be a people of a community that knows the right thing to do and does it. Dr. King called this the beloved community. Here's what he writes. Love is creative and redemptive. Love builds up and unites. Hate tears down and destroys. The aftermath of the fight fire with fire method is bitterness and chaos. The aftermath of love, of the love method, is reconciliation and the creation of the beloved community. Physical force, he writes, can repress, restrain, coerce, destroy, but it cannot create and organize anything permanent. Only love can do that. Yes, love, which means understanding, creative, redemptive, goodwill, even for our enemies, is the solution to today's problems. That is the unity of spirit, that which binds us together in peace, which Paul speaks of in Ephesians, that which is the unity of the Spirit, is our love, our aloha. And it is something that is there at all times, no matter the walls and the vessels that we may create to block that out. And there is a song that Rebecca pointed out to me that she's not playing, but we may actually hear months from now, by Leonard Cohen that some of you may know, called Anthem. And the key lines there talk about that light. He writes, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. Go back to Amos. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. We are called to be that beloved community that can indeed shine that light through the cracks into everything. So, a week ago, she blew us away with Rachmaninoff, and now we get Rebecca Clark. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. What a gift.